Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Watts for Jack Watts Live, broadcasting to you today from the 10th floor of the We Believe Tower in Midtown Atlanta, overlooking the majestic Buckhead skyline, where the day is dark and dreary. This time last week, I was broadcasting from Clearwater, Florida, where it was 80 degrees, and I was able to walk on the beach. And today, we're planning for another freezing snow in Atlanta so that everybody was at the store buying things today. And in my high-rise apartment, there's no hot water, just the kind of thing that makes you enjoy being an American. Okay, folks. We started last week with our guest, Mitch Swann, who is running for Congress in the 10th district in Georgia as a Republican. It's an open seat. He's got a great chance. The Republican is going to win because the people in Georgia have enough common sense to know what is happening in our nation's capital, and that we cannot spend money that we do not have and continue to incur debt upon debt upon debt. Oh, isn't it fair? These people need this. Nobody needs to work. Give them some free food. Give them a phone. They don't need anything. I mean, you know, this is just fair. Well, every taxpayer is in debt, current debt, for $153,000, and that's just the tax liability. It doesn't have anything to do with your car payment, your house payment, or everything else. So that means that a man and wife who just get married owe $300,000. That's a nice house, $300,000, a nice house. They owe to pay for things that we have already had. Not good. We're going to talk about some other things today. And Mitch is on the line. Mitch, are you there?
I am, sir. Thank you for having me, Jack.
You're welcome. And I also want to say my brother's on the line. Richard, are you there?
Yes, I am, Jack. Hi, Mitch.
Okay.
Hey, Richard. Good to hear from you again.
You too.
All right. Last week we talked about the issue with illegal immigration and a way out of it as one of your 5 points that you're running on. Today, we're going to start with your idea about a flat tax. And number one, I want you to just tell people, what is a flat tax? I mean, I remember when I was in high school, we didn't like flat girls, but that doesn't have anything to do with this, does it?
No, it doesn't. In fact, if you really want me to get an education, I've been told not to share this with people because it confuses voters. But there's a type of tax called a fair tax. And a fair tax simply means it applies to everyone equally. Now, there's two types of a fair tax. Some prefer a national sales tax, in which we'd only pay tax to the federal government every time we purchase something. And I know that Neil Bortz is a huge fan of that, and there's a lot of benefit to it, and I've read his book. The other type of fair tax is referred to as a flat tax. And a flat tax sets a rate, a percentage, that everyone pays. And so what I have done is I've actually chosen the flat tax for math reasons, ease of conversion, and it also helps me solve some of these significant problems facing our nation with some confidence of what revenue will come in, which I prefer over a national sales tax. And I also would caution people on a national sales tax. In the situation where you have high inflation, where something that you bought last month costs $100, but a year from now costs $200, if you're paying 6%, while the percentage rate stays the same for a national sales tax, 6%, you go from paying $6 for every $100 to $12 for something that's $200. And so I'm trying to not put government on the side of collecting more revenue as a result of inflation, but by setting a flat tax based on a percentage of my income, that they should want to have more Americans make more money. That puts them on the same side of the table as I am, if that makes sense.
So that means that there are more, and it means that everybody has some skin in the game.
everybody has skin in the game, and so that's kind of how a flat tax works. And mine's a little bit unique, and I can share some of the uniqueness with you when you'd like.
Now, you know what? Go ahead, Richard.
Does that eliminate the IRS?
Well, what it does is, well, why don't we get into then what Bill 2 does, just to refresh some of your listeners.
I want to just preface this whole thing by saying I went to Emory, and I did everything but the dissertation for a PhD, so I'm not stupid, but I cannot do my own taxes, and I have to sign my name to things every dadgum year that I do not understand. I am legally responsible for things that I cannot figure out because it is so complicated, cumbersome, and convoluted. And this is something that is infuriating to just about every American that I know. This isn't just Republican versus Democrat. This is all of us that have to sit our little butts down this time of year and figure out how in the hell am I going to take care of all the stupid things they're doing in Washington. All right, now that I've said that, let's just go a little deeper into this. Feel free. Okay. Go ahead, Mitch.
we'll touch on that. Remind me to get to the other complications that we have. But as we last week we talked about resolving immigration because we have to step away now and move on. So last week we talked about coming up with a solution. We encourage at least 10 million people and more if possible, but 10 million people to sign up. We had them fund their own solution. We had those individuals seeking citizenship to be able to achieve it in 3 years, don't break a law, don't get convicted of a crime, speak basic English, and pass the exam for all immigrants, and to pay us $3,600. And in doing that, we raised $36 billion as a nation. They fund their own solution, not us, the current taxpayers. But now we've created, looking at this as a macro problem, that is a solution to one, but it creates some other problems, doesn't it? If we assess our own nation right now, we currently have high unemployment. And with Bill 1, we've just created 10 million legal workers that we know will become citizens in 36 months. We have to jumpstart our economy, don't we? We want everybody to start getting jobs. We have to look at our public debt, which you alluded to in your opening. We have $17 trillion of public debt. That's what the federal government owes. But we also have private debt. That's what all citizens owe on our own consumer promises, our credit cards, our cars, and our homes. And the U.S. citizens, your listeners and myself, we all owe $38 trillion privately. So it's important that we be able to pay our bills. Congress and the government can't just say, I'm going to raise taxes because my debt is sovereign to yours. No, our debt is sovereign to us as Americans, and we must be able to honor our debts to each other. We also have low manufacturing as a nation. Most people don't realize, but our manufacturing here in the U.S. represents about 19% of our GDP. 79% of our GDP is actually services, and then only 2% is agricultural. And I can talk to you later in another show why we're going to have to become an agricultural nation again. We also have a large number of our cities going bankrupt, don't we? So we all know about Detroit, but we also have New York and Chicago and Los Angeles. And not just our cities, but we have states like New Jersey, Illinois, New York, California, Michigan. So we have to find a way to make them solvent and be able to honor their debts as well. And many of the things holding them back are the union pensions, and those are the unfunded liabilities that the residents of those states owe to their retired union workers. And right now, as an example, we would look at Illinois as the highest, the worst credit rating of all states, and it owes $100 billion in unfunded pension liabilities. So what?
Wait a minute. So Illinois is the least solvent state in the union? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
You mean not Barack Obama's state in Rahm Emanuel, where he's the mayor in the old Daily Machine. I mean, certainly this couldn't be so. I mean, states that, you know, that are so ignorant and backward, like Mississippi and South Carolina and Georgia and Kentucky and places like that, they've got to be worse off than Illinois, don't they?
I see where you're going with that. Yes. Well, we'll talk. There are problems that all states actually face, and I'll explain that. In Bill 1, we actually made illegal immigrants Americans. All I did with Bill 1 is we made them Americans. But what we're lacking as a nation right now is the American dream. We know that our middle class is decimated, and we also know that these new Latinos and foreigners will want to enjoy the American dream. So Bill 2 does that. As you and I just kind of framed out, that's kind of the environment. That's the assessment we're operating in. So how do we reform taxes to overcome all those headwinds? Well, my solution is a flat tax. I do 15% per individual. That's you, Dick, myself, your listeners. We all pay 15% on our income to the federal government, 20% for corporations. Now, here's what's unique for the individuals. I give every American the first $20,000 free. And, of course, the question is, well, why would you let people have the first $20,000 free? And the answer is that we have so many young people graduating college, trying to get a job. They're already paying into a Social Security system that will be bankrupt by the time that they're ready to retire. We're making them pay higher insurance costs now to buy health care. They've got student loans on their back that they have to pay for. They have a public debt of $52,000 per person towards the $17 trillion that our federal government owes. And I also have those 10 million people trying to become U.S. citizens. And so I let everybody have the first $20,000 free. And what that means is that you, me, and Dick, we would lose 15% every paycheck, but then every April we would get a tax refund on that first $20,000 of $3,000. Any American that earns any income for the year under this plan will get a tax refund. If they make $20,000 or more, they will get $3,000. Everything over $20,000 will be taxed at 15% and retained by the federal government. So if I was to make $30,000 a year, I would get a $3,000 refund check, but the government would keep the $1,500, the 15% of the $10,000 above that. So if you paid $1,500 on $30,000, that is a net income tax of 5%. Now, in addition to that, the other thing that my flat tax reform does, beyond the 15 and 20% tax brackets, you have no capital gains, dividends, or interest. I do not believe that people should be taxed for investing or saving their own money. I especially have a problem when our government sells U.S. treasuries that only pay 2% for 10 years because they're begging for money, they're not paying you much interest, but then have the audacity to tax you on that small, meager 2%. I also get rid of all tax.
All right, now listen, let me just ask you, right now, how much total money comes into the government for federal taxes?
I believe it's about $3 trillion a year is what we're bringing in.
Three?
Yes, sir.
For
I can go check
tax.
My numbers on that. For income tax
and then,
corporate tax.
All right, and the with your plan, how much would come in?
Well, the purpose of my
in other words, here's
reduced
the question I'm
yes,
asking:
sir.
With this plan that you have, would the federal government have more money to spend, or less, or about the same? And you're just doing it in a way that's more fair and equitable. That's the question.
Sure. Well, let me finish the last three things, and I'll tie them all in. We have no more tax credits under this. So that means that you're not going to get the marriage tax credit. You're not going to get tax credit for buying solar-powered windows. Wouldn't that be neat if you had solar-powered windows? But if you buy solar panels or more energy-efficient windows, because that's a way of manipulating behavior, we would impose an 8% internet sales tax to recoup some of that revenue for the states. And we would also eliminate the alternative minimum tax, because what you alluded to in the beginning of the show is very important. We have a very complex tax system that when you just follow that system, it's very hard and difficult. But there are triggers in there, too, where they don't want anyone to get too good of a deal, and that's called the alternative minimum tax. And then a whole different set of rules kick in if you make a certain amount of money. And so that's very confusing. You actually have two parallel income tax systems going. So we eliminate that. So to your question, how will I increase revenue if I'm reducing all of these things? Well, one is by not having tax credits, which is a form of welfare. Now think about this. I actually know an individual who paid, he didn't make much money. He paid $2,000 for 2012 for his taxes, but he got a $3,000 tax refund check. And he says, hey, I got $3,000 as a tax refund. Well, no, you didn't, my friend. You only paid $2,000. You got $2,000 as a tax refund, but you got $1,000 as a form of welfare, because that's what tax credits are. So, yes, I'm allowing less money to flow into the government, but I'm also having less money flow back in the forms of loopholes or tax credits. Now, the purpose of the 15 and 20 is because I want to see, one, Americans have more money in their pockets so that they can go and purchase more things. That is a form of stimulus. I also want them to be able to honor their debts. But by going to a 20% corporate tax rate, now corporations get to have what's called retained earnings. If they go from a 35% tax bracket currently down to a 20% tax bracket, even if they sell the same amount of goods next year that they did last year, they're going to enjoy 15% more of their profits. So that will help them employ more people. You're very well.
Do more research.
No.
Have more product. Yeah. Do more advertising. Expand their base. Everything that it can that lets people who want to grow have the ability to do so. And that's what made America great to begin with. Oh, by the way, yes.
Yes, and bring people back on for full-time employment and get away from this 29-hour work week to avoid the health care problems. So there's a lot there for corporations. Now, one of the problems we discussed was how do we let states and municipalities bail themselves out of these bankruptcy situations that they're facing and not let them become another Detroit? Well, with the current tax law, and this is where I said some of our states have something in common, all high-income earners in this nation must pay 39.6% to the federal government, regardless of what state you live in. So if you live in New York City or Chicago, and those cities are going underwater because they owe a lot of money, they can't tax their municipal taxes up higher to a rate that will sustain their expenses because they know that those high-income earners will potentially move away. Because with 39.6% federal, you raise me up to 20%, I have to leave because I'm giving up all my money now to taxes. But by going to a 15% flat tax, your high-income earners, it puts 24% more meat on that tax bone. And in theory, municipalities and cities or states can raise their taxes 20% in this scenario, and those high-income earners still enjoy a 4% tax relief in this plan. But what that allows those cities and states to do is to tax to their need and not put that burden on other taxpayers like us in Georgia or Texas and the other states that you mentioned that are doing it right. We don't have to bail them out down the road. They can bail themselves out themselves. The other good thing about this is it absolutely will stimulate the stock market. Now, why is that important? I mentioned that many of these states are facing they're underwater in pensions and they're unfunded. They owe more money than they have. Well, much of that is because the largest accounts on Wall Street do not belong to the 1% individuals. The largest accounts belong to states like Michigan, Illinois, and New Jersey with their pension plans. And these pension plans took such a hit to principal in 2008 when the market crashed down that they continued to make their monthly obligations, paying out the principal, but it never allowed the principal to recover and grow. So we really need to stimulate the stock market. This 15 and 20 flat tax does it in two ways. One, I mentioned that the retained earnings of corporations will be 15%. That lowers their PE, and it stimulates that. The second thing I do is I give more people money in their pocket to go and save and invest. Put money into the stock market because now you're in the 15% tax bracket. The other thing we did is we eliminated capital gains, dividends, and interest taxes. So now people can invest and not be worried about paying a punitive tax on their investments that they make. And all of that will help raise the stock market on fundamental reasons and not stimulus, not this false quantitative easing that we're doing, but something sound. And it also creates the opportunity for manufacturing to return to our shores. And I think I touched on this last week with immigration. Our economy did not collapse because illegals came, you know, left Mexico and came to the United States. Our economy has collapsed because U.S. jobs have left the United States and gone to places like China and Indonesia and South America, where their tax laws are more generous to them and their labor costs are lower. Now, also, because I've made all these illegal residents legal residents and then future American citizens, they'll require to have the minimum wage paid to them. So that will, in many instances, cause the labor to go up from what they might be being paid now under the table. But that's why I take the corporations down to 20%. I make their overhead as a corporation come down so that now it's cheaper because they don't pay the logistics costs and so forth to ship the goods back to the U.S. for sale, that they can pay the minimum wage, they can bring people back on for more than 29 hours a week, and they can still operate at a profit.
All right. Now, if we did all of this, would the gross national product increase, number one, just by nature? It sounds like it would. Two, a lot of these CPAs, if they're not out of business, it sounds to me like if we did this, I would be able to do my own taxes because it on one sheet of paper. And
you would be able to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean this is just simple math now. Instead of all of these things and having to have somebody who goes to all of these tax classes and all of this, I mean, over the years, I cannot tell you how many thousands of dollars I have paid to CPAs to do this, and have had things that went wrong, and I've been audited, and I, you know, have been in situations with the IRS where I felt like my pants were down, and I didn't really actually, I mean, and I was responsible and accountable, but it was beyond my math ability to know this. And like I said earlier, I'm not stupid, but I, you know, the stuff is so convoluted now. We'd be getting rid of all of that and just simplifying the thing and making it much easier. And it certainly seems to me as if this would take a great deal of the pressure off of Congress, and it would also eliminate a lot of these pork barrel things that they're doing, wouldn't it?
Well, it does a lot of things. And I'll talk to Dick's point. He said, will it eliminate the IRS? And it actually does not. We still have to have, you know, enforcement. We still need to have people process this, and we still have them people to issue our refund checks. But I do believe, and in my plan, in step four, we actually eliminate 40,000 individuals from the IRS, which is currently employing 90,000 individuals. So that's number one. We do make the IRS smaller. How does it affect CPAs? Certainly CPAs will not have to process as many individual returns, but most of them enjoy doing payroll and other things for businesses, especially small businesses. And so while they'll still be able to process these for us, they're still going to have that accounting role in expensing inventory, doing depreciation, accurately incurring the costs that the business owners, you know, did to determine what, in fact, their profit is. So there'll still be work for them. The one other point I forgot to mention is that most fair taxes don't have an estate feature, but I do. I actually allow everyone to inherit, which is more generous than they can today, the first $3 million free. So if your parents will you their estate and it's under $3 million, you pay no inheritance tax. Everything over the $3 million, I will look for 30%. So in my example, let's say that your parents willed you $13 million. You would get the first $3 million free. you would have to pay 30% on the remaining $10 million. Your estate tax would be $3 million. And so at the end of the day, you're left with $10 million. Now, some people, you know, think that that's unfair. Well, there's still ways that people deal with it today, especially farmers. They still do estate planning. They buy life insurance to cover the cost of taxes and things like that. There are still trust work that can be done to set those things up. But I like to remind people that under this plan, you will have larger estates left to your children. And why will they have larger estates? And why will the kids then be able to grow that inheritance that they receive much faster than their parents or grandparents accumulated it? Well, they are able to because there are no capital gains, dividends, or interest any longer. And so all those family wealth will grow much faster. So there'll still be some work for CPAs to structure around estate planning and certainly financial planners. And the internet sales tax is very important to me, Jack, and you'll appreciate this living down in Buckhead. There's a lot of beautiful shops down there and mom-and-pop stores. And, of course, because they have facilities and they pay overhead, it's hard for them to compete with big box retailers at a price point that, you know, still draws customers. But on top of that, they have to pay sales tax on the products that they sell to the customers. Internet retailers, however, online retailers, do not. They do not have a presence in the state. And because they don't have presence in the state, they're exempt from sales tax. And it makes it very hard for that local florist and that local shoe store owner to compete on price. However, if we implement an 8% internet sales tax, I'm leveling the playing field for those local merchants that we enjoy so much so that their price points are at least competitive on sales tax with the online retailers. And I think that's necessary because, as you mentioned, because I have eliminated some tax revenue, although I expect it to increase because manufacturing and business and the economy will pick up on a broad scale. I just lost my point.
We only have a couple of minutes left. Let me just start asking a couple of questions.
Certainly.
It seems to me like, I like this idea. It's so simple. It's easy to understand. And because it's easy to understand and because it would be easy for people to do, it would put the power back with individuals and away from Washington. It makes me think that this is something that would have a very hard time working just because the scoundrels there, not just Obama, who is a terrible scoundrel, but even but people in the House and Senate who are used to wielding the power and wielding the money, they don't want to give that up.
It takes a bridle off of us, doesn't it? We're no longer under the control and authority of the government. We now have freedom and liberty again. And the reason
doesn't
we do
that
this
sound happens, nice?
It does, sir. Yes, it does.
And you know, and of course, it makes me think also of the drones that, you know, that he's, you know, it's okay for them to kill American citizens with drones. Just scares me to death. But anyway, but that's for another time. We have literally 1 minute, so Dick, do you have some questions that you want to ask? Or
I have the question that you asked earlier. If currently $3 trillion is coming in, what does your plan, what do you anticipate the tax income to be versus the $3
trillion? I think it's going to be revenue neutral. I think we're still going to bring in as much money because now, remember.
Okay, that's the key. I think that's the key to everything.
Remember, we have a lot of people in this country that pay zero, but now everyone's going to pay something. And my example of the individual making $30,000 a year, sure, he's only paying 5% net, but it's still something. It's $1,500. You multiply that out. The other thing is now I have more illegal immigrants, right? Because I remember I made 10 million new citizens, 10 million new legal workers who come out of the shadows. So now I'm collecting that in payroll taxes. I'm bringing manufacturing back to my U.S., which is critical to us. It doesn't matter if it's revenue neutral or not. If we're still going to keep going into the hole and never restore manufacturing here as a nation, our wealth will never increase. being a service nation always fails. It's failing for
Europe. Okay, we'll have to pick this up next week. We're out of time. And so I've got to say goodnight. And thanks, Mitch and Richard. We will pick this up next week. And God bless both of you. And God bless the United States of America. Good night.
Bye-bye.